on Wednesday. I'm sorry, to their old spot on Sunday, saying they had understood it was all right if they didn't block walkways near the rink. Kolb said that Sunday night, park rangers again asked the group not to set up near the rink where a band would perform. The group members were told they could serve their vegetarian meals from a makeshift concession area in the square away from the rink, Kolb said, but they refused. "Do you really want the police involved?" Kolb recalls asking them. It was like they weren't listening. Park rangers and Los Angeles police then arrested them, but the activists recalled the events differently. Again, this is a story in the L.A. Times, I remind you, which is quite a broad sweep throughout the Southland down there. They say park rangers were out in full force waiting for them when they arrived. They described the arrests as a sweep that caught activists who were outside the disputed zone. They also say they can't understand why they can't feed the homeless wherever they want in a public park. "Feeding people in poverty shouldn't violate any park permits anywhere," said David Bush, who was arrested. "It's very disturbing to see a group trying to feed the homeless is arrested. It sends a terrible message. Seven were booked for standing in an area designated for use by permit only, according to Sergeant Rick Harris. Bail was set at $100 each. I'm surprised it's gone this far," Kolb said. "I would hope they would go right on feeding the homeless in another area of the park. We have no objection to that." This is the LA Times. Police arrest seven activists in park dispute about arrests of food, not bombs. And I don't know. What do you make of this, James?
Just usual bull, you know. I mean, come on. It's it's the skating rink. I mean, it's the typical money over homeless. I mean, oh my God, the people might see a homeless person or two partaking of a hot meal and filling their belly while they're out there spending their money skating on ice that cost all this money to set up, you know. Maybe that makes them feel uncomfortable. So, police answer to the poor people feeling uncomfortable is to make the homeless person really uncomfortable. I mean, come on. You know, arrest activists for feeding people? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, interestingly enough, here's an eyewitness account. This is another email. End repression at Pershing Square. I heard about the street arrest through the LAAMN listserv. I went over to Pershing Square this evening, Sunday 26th, last Sunday, to offer my services to Food Not Bombs or to at least hear bear witness to anything that might happen. What I found when I got there between 5:15 and 5:30 was a place absolutely swarming with cops. You'd think there had been a riot or a shootout or some kind of terrorist act. The cops had even parked at a bus stop, so the people had to get out in the middle of the street to catch their buses. Now that has to be something that would inconvenience the citizenry a lot more than the mere sight of someone serving free food. The mere presence of all the armed thugs would be a lot more intimidating to the yuppie ice skaters than the presence of Food Not Bombs could ever be. "Does anyone know what happened to the Food Not Bombs volunteers?" asks this email writer. "I know I got there a little late. I wonder if the cops already swept them up," and so forth. So he asks, "We all need to rally in support of Food Not Bombs. I think the denial of public space is really a serious offense against the people. No matter what cause we're working for, if we let the rich and the powerful chase us out of public spaces, then we might as well not have any rights at all. Free expression in public areas is just basic and fundamental, and yes, I think the act of serving free food qualifies as symbolic speech because it's a big slap in the face of an uncaring establishment. I work for a pro-immigrant group called La Resistencia, and we have had our First Amendment rights violated. Even though free expression was not our original issue, we had to do a lot of publicity and protesting for the authorities to recognize our right to leaflet on the sidewalk outside the downtown federal building. We even had a member who was arrested three times for the right to leaflet. He was denied a jury trial, and the prosecutor got my testimony and his support stricken from the record. Eventually, we did get what we wanted, a declaration by the building manager that we had free speech rights on the sidewalk. But who's to say the federal cops couldn't revoke that right at any time? We even heard a federal cop make this incredible Kafka-esque statement. Quote, if people are too stupid to realize they have freedom of speech, then they don't deserve freedom of speech. It seems that political activity in public space is under constant attack everywhere. Just look at Seattle. So I think the activist community needs to get involved in this in a bigger way. I think, at a very minimum, there should be a noisy, yet legal and peaceful demonstration on the sidewalk surrounding Pershing Square. Even if the park manager thinks he can control what goes on inside his park, oops, sorry, I mean the park he claims to operate on behalf of the people, it will be a bigger jump for him to claim he can restrict sidewalk activity. If Food Not Bombs calls for it, we should all turn out for our people there. I think there are some strong possibilities for coalition here. At a minimum, every organization that deals with poverty or hunger and homelessness or police brutality and repression or the misplacement of budget priorities on war and prisons at the expense of human needs should help Food Not Bombs fight for the park if they ask for it. And that was an email by Tom Louie. again about a situation in Los Angeles that's developing with the arrest, looks like now, of 8 people for serving food in Pershing Park, apparently over the wishes of an ice skating rink gang, even though Food Not Bombs have been serving in the area for, according to this, two years, twice a week. You know, we have a Food Not Bombs in San Francisco. I'm in San Francisco, here in Santa Cruz, and of course there is one also in San Francisco.
Yeah, there's one in San Francisco, too.
Right, and they, of course, were suffering a number of arrests back in October, but since November, I guess the arrests have stopped. And even under His Majesty, Your Honor, Willie Brown, or Whitewash Willie, as I call him, the new mayor, thank you, Mr. Moneybags of San Francisco, it apparently hasn't stopped in other places. And, you know, I'm pleased to see that in Santa Cruz, at least for the last few years, the battle has been won around the free food issue. The last arrest for free food that I remember happening, well, they were confiscating food at the homeless vigil back in 1996, but they didn't really take us to the mat on that in front of City Hall, and we were protesting the sleeping ban over some of us, most of us. Well, a few were sleeping out, the rest were supportive over about a 7.5-month period. But there is still, I think, a concerted attack on people in public spaces here in Santa Cruz.
Absolutely. I absolutely believe that, you know, you have to be the right sort to use the public parks in Santa Cruz. I mean,
Do you have any basis for saying this, or are you just being one of your usual homeless ideologue self there, James?
My usual obnoxious self? No. Well, no, actually it is a basis. I mean, the thing that gets me is that you can see a large percentage of what you would call your tourist population, your newbies, your people that come in, use our services, and go away again. But they spend a lot of money. Okay? Well, these people are treated differently even than local people. And they can do things like drink in the park. They can do things like drink down by the beach and stuff. And it's no big deal. If something is said, it's called, excuse me, I'm so sorry, kiss, 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 and go away. If you're homeless or that type of person or look in any way like you're poor, you will be run like crazy.
So, yeah, that's certainly, I mean, it's certainly true. You get the open container laws supposedly enforced against anybody with alcohol in public that's where an open container. But as we'll probably see tomorrow night, and I think that'll be a perfect place to see this, unless the police change their policies, we're going to see police targeting drunk homeless people, let's say, but ignoring, or let's say, shining on drunk middle-class people. We're going
to
see.
I very much expect to see that tomorrow night. Very much expect. In fact, you know, they've been gearing up for this. You know, we're getting our little special training.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I have a New Year's Eve experience I'd like to share with you all.
Well, it's not New Year's Eve yet, son.
I know it's not. It's from 3 years ago.
Oh, go ahead.
With Officer Lamas of Santa Cruz Police Department.
Is this Trigger Happy Lamas, as we like to call him?
Yeah, in fact, I call him Quick Draw Lamas myself.
You want to explain to the audience why you use that pseudonym or that...
Quick Draw Lamas?
Yeah, that cognomen.
Back in 1996, I believe it was the month of September, he was... engaged in checking a man for a stolen car down in a parking lot behind Pearl Alley, where there used to be a Baseline record store there. It's not Baseline anymore, it's something else, some hairdresser place. Behind the Pearl Alley and the Dakota nightclub back there in that parking lot. And he was, I guess, supposedly this guy was in the stolen car, allegedly tried to run the officer down, but I don't know how true that is. I wasn't there, but I do know that the officer responded by drawing his gun and firing 9 shots, I believe, 4 of which hit the car in different spots, and 5 of the bullets went flying, and one of them actually almost hit Sister Snatch, a programmer over there. It's going to be on tonight at 10 o'clock that night. But anyway, my story, back to my story with Lamas, that year, New Year's Eve, on 1996, December 31st, 1996 to January 1st, 1997. First night, I was downtown, and this was a year that we had actually set up a Food Not Bombs, and we were serving food at first night on the mall at the old hippie corner, Cathcart and Pacific, before that building was there. And anyway, so we had set up food, and we served for a while, and we were headed up towards the mall, towards the clock tower, getting close to midnight, and we tried to set up there, but that didn't work out. And after midnight, everybody was parading back down Pacific Avenue to go towards Benicio's Liquors, I imagine. And as everybody was parading back, and it was after midnight, it started to rain, and I personally, myself, hadn't had a drop of alcohol that night. I was planning on saving it until I was safely at home to get drunk and celebrate the New Year, and was completely sober walking down the mall, and I see, like you were just talking about how the police selectively enforce, and I, you know, at the time had been in between homes, and I was like kind of couch surfing, I guess you could have termed me homeless at the time, and I was serving Food Not Bombs, and I was known to some of these police officers from various things, and I had been given a bottle of wine by this woman, this yuppie woman who had been drinking, and it was funny, she was like walking next to me, she was openly chugging from this bottle and yelling and screaming, Happy New Year, Happy New Year, and she was like obviously, you know, loaded, not just with money, but like just drunk, mm-hmm. And so she ends up handing me another bottle, a completely new, fresh bottle of wine, unopened, and Happy New Year! And just because I made a comment about how she was, like, you know, drinking a bottle of wine, and she hands me this bottle, so I was like, thank you. I stick it in my pocket, and I didn't even open it, and I just put it in my pocket, and it was sticking out of my shirt pocket, not, you know.
Did the police see this exchange or not?
No, I had it in my pocket. I walked down the mall, and I stopped in front of community television only because I saw Dan Hopkins on the screen, and I was trying to see what he was talking about, but
Dan
I couldn't.
Dan is a homeless activist.
Right, and at that time, the vigil had just broken up, I guess, a few months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what he was talking about. But anyway, I wanted to see that, and so I stopped, and the next thing I know, Lamas reached around me. Quick draw, Lamas reached around and grabbed this bottle out of my shirt pocket. It was like, you know, like a flannel type shirt. So
Lamaze is not just quick on the trigger, but he seems to be light fingered as well.
Yes, and he just like slipped in behind me, grabbed the bottle, and started to walk away. And so I like turn, I go, "Hey, what are you doing?" Right? And there's like all these other police officers there. Suddenly, like a couple of sheriffs, posse guys, and I remember Officer Brandt was there too. He was in the vicinity.
Did he have his attack dog with
him? And Officer Sten. No, this is before he got the dog.
Hmm.
This is before they had that dog.
Mm-hmm.
And Officer Sten was there, too. And I started, you know, we get in this argument, and I tell him, I asked him to give me a ticket. I said, you're going to have to cite me and give me a receipt for that property you just took. You can't just take that from me arbitrarily. Oh, yes, I can. There's an ordinance. No glass on the mall. And I said, well, give me a ticket then. Give me a fucking citation. I will fight it, and you'll have to give me a property receipt for that. And you can't just go home and take it home and drink it after you get off work. He wouldn't give me a ticket, and he kept telling me, file a complaint. And finally, he just walked off, and he wouldn't arrest me, he wouldn't give me a ticket or
anything. Are you accusing one of our fair boys in blue of being, should we say, simply a thief?
Yes.
On the air, publicly?
Definitely. Absolutely.
For heaven's sake, Officer Lamaze, wherever you
Christian,
are.
Christian. Call him. He was in that paper picture today. He's the guy behind the riot shield. With Steve Clark.
For the honor of the
photo?
Police force. Shame this. This is the V-man speaking, right?
That's right.
So, Vinny, you're making a serious allegation.
I make
allegation.
No bones about it.
So, Officer Lamaze, are you going to fess up and give this man a bottle of wine in return to the bottle you took? Come on, Lamaze.
Yeah, man.
Show some style.
Giving. I'm a good person. I do good deeds for people. Some woman just gave me a bottle of wine out of the kindness of her heart, and this fucking pig stole it from me.
Well,
that was my New Year's present from the Santa Cruz police.
Well, I thank you for sharing.
And then they told me to file a complaint knowing that the CPRB is a useless body that isn't going to do anything. So, of course they're telling me to file a complaint. That's in their interest for me to file a complaint. Anyway.
Well, I'm pleased you let us know that because I think it's important to know not just the police are engaging in petty harassment, but some of them have sunk so low as to simply steal property from people on New Year's Eve. I mean,
yeah.
If this is true,
they get
trunk
full of booze.
Say.
I'm sure they have a big party back at the police station.
They never do that. And
sure they do.
Never, ever. I mean, we know that, for example, fireworks, this is all a rumor being spread. Well, that's only the deputy.
They hired that guy.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Scary. You know, after it's out of the public eye, they put them back on the force.
Well, listen, I thank you, Vinny. And,
hey,
and
that's my New Year's story.
Hey, keep your bottle more deeply in your pocket.
That's my first night story, yeah. Hey. And watch out for riot cops on New
Year's. Right, you know, carry some payoff money, I guess the answer is. Huh?
Santa Cruz should start investing in gas masks.
I don't know. It sounds like...
New Year's revelers.
Sounds pretty bad. Listen, thank you very much, Vinny.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Well, you know, I always get really nervous when I hear about actual corruption, even of a petty sort, on the police force. And again, I haven't heard Officer Lamaze's story, and I probably never will, although he's invited, or anyone who wants to defend him is invited to call into the station, 427-3772, and, you know, give another side to the story. I've known Vinny for a number of years. I've never known him to be untruthful. It sounds like he's recounting a personal experience fairly candidly. Maybe one of Officer Lamaze's compatriots can call in. You can use a voice scrambler if you wish to avoid identifying yourself and give us the straight dope. Aha! Could this be the police department?
Hi, you're on free radio.
This is Officer Lamaze. I just heard that caller. He's one of those anarchist people that just want to make an anarchist statement. Carry bottles of wine on the mall. What's up with that?
You know, I somehow doubt this is Officer Lamaze. You can't put one over on me, big boy.
All right.
This sounds like one of those cop watchers. In fact, I suspect this is Skidmark Bob, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's me.
Do you
want to be just like Officer Lamaze.
You mean able to get free wine on request?
And blow my gun off whenever I want to downtown and get away with it.
I see. Well,
kind of like what Officer got shot Happy John Dine.
Connor Carey.
He can kill people whatever he wants and get away with it seems.
Well, he certainly got away with that last one, or at least I heard of no disciplinary consequences. So, Bob, do you know anything about this? Were you anywhere in the vicinity when Vinny allegedly had a bottle of wine taken by one of the finest?
No, I don't know about that. I think he was pretty drunk and probably rolling on the ground or something. Lucky he wasn't arrested that night.
Yeah, probably. He's probably just as drunk as a skunk. Thank you very much, Bob.
Carrying bottles on the mall. What the hell's his problem?
I don't know. The guy is, you know, he's one of these...
He's a rebel. He's one of those rebel, just trying to make an anarchist-type statement, and we won't allow that.
I appreciate that, Bob.
But I have a little Y2K news
for
you. Evidently, in England, credit cards are not working. you go to use your credit card in England area, and credit cards are just not working. It's not happening. So that's like some of the first things I've heard so far.
You got to whip out the wampum and the corn stalks.
So who?
Well, something else.
Wampum with corn stalks.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Well, that's what I heard firsthand here.
Interesting. Well, all you folks who are heading for England, carry cash.
But yeah, I gotta love that front page of the Sent Anal with the cops looking all mean on there. I had a chance to watch the Channel 46 news. I'm sorry I didn't get to listen to the beginning of your show.
Mm-hmm.
But they had Sergeant Clark on there. And they for some reason, they showed it's not going to be like Seattle, and they showed this clip of Seattle and tear gas and people crying and screaming. But they can take care of it if it does happen like this.
They have their gas masks, their foot-long batons, and their...
Right.
I was reading about that, too, and actually, I wrote a flyer about it today because I'm concerned. I think it would be good to have a cop watch downtown tomorrow.
I'm sure there'll be some people out.
I know that Suffering Bob is planning a cop watch at 5 o'clock from the Rise Zone at 224 Walnut for anyone who's interested.
Uh-huh.
And also, at 1 o'clock, there's going to be a table set up outside the Veterans Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to kind of check in there, some of us are also planning to be kind of a cop watch contact point, I think.
Ooh, sorry.
That's okay. Dan Cooper is going to be there. That's the guy who kind of gives out signature petitions on the mall for people like you. He is a signature coordinator for petitions for those who do that to make a living.
Right.
And there are going to be a lot of signature gatherers out on the mall, and he's also going to let his table serve as a contact point for Cop Watch.
Also, people can call me in studio tomorrow night, and I'll be in the studio.
That's cool. And, of course, that's at 427-3772.
And give me reports of what's going on.
That might be a very good thing to do because, you know, I suspect there's going to be a lot going on. This is not just the end of the century.
It's the end of the world.
It's probably the end of life as we know it.
That's
At least until tomorrow.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
But I better hurry up because I got to work the next day.
You'd better get back to work.
All right.
Thank you, Bob.
Rock on, Robert.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, as I said, I wrote a flyer today about the police and the last decade of distinguished service, and I'm speaking sarcastically, of some police officers, though there are others who have just, you know, performed just fine. And indeed, I want to say that it's not the rule that every police officer you meet is an abusive person and is necessarily engaging in discriminatory enforcement. But it is also not true that you have a few bad apples in the barrel, which I like to hear from some of my liberal friends. I think it's rather a system that tends to deform people who get into it as a job, you know, because if you are in it and your fellow officers are engaging in, I don't know, taking bottles of wine or harassing homeless people or shooting people, you know, it takes a lot of pizzazz to turn on that officer in any kind of objective or adversarial way, even if the community interest and the community good would demand it. You don't see that happening much. We have an incoming call.
Breaking news.
We have some breaking news here?
Yeah, apparently there's a dead body somewhere on the west side. They're going to that right now.
Are you going to be checking this out? Or?
Yes, possibly. Just heard...
Hold on.
I'll let you know what goes on. I just wanted to let you know.
Please, yeah, give us a call back. Thank you.
So, hey, you heard it first on Free Radio Santa Cruz. There's apparently a dead body has been found up on High Street. The V-Man and other Free Radio broadcasters and reporters are going to check out the scene. And hopefully we'll have further information for us from the scene as to who did what to who, when, and how. Really important, by the way, that people like Vinny do this, because the shooting of Happy John Dine by Officer Connor Carey back in November of 1997, much of the information we have about what happened, the reports from eyewitnesses, comes from Vinny, who happened to be a few blocks away and who went over to that scene when he heard about it and immediately began interviewing every person he could find as to what had happened. These interviews were suppressed, and the police attempted to discredit or ignore them, as did the district attorney's office, but they remain the kind of the spine of what understanding we really do have of the shooting of that developmentally disabled homeless activist, Happy John Dine, who was shot dead by two bullets from the gun of Officer Connor Carey on November 12, 1997, about 6 o'clock in the evening at that bus stop right across from the New Leaf Market on Front Street. And, of course, that's never been investigated by any independent agency. The Citizens Police Review Board rubber-stamped the story put out by the police chief and by the district attorney within 24 hours that Dine was holding a weapon, or what appeared to be a weapon, in his hand. He was pointing it at an officer in a combat stance. It was clearly visible, and that the officers, he was menacing the officers with it. People ranging from Alani Balowager on the roof of the New Leaf Market to Mike Schultz and Stacy Buckaloo driving by in a car to Tom, I don't remember his name, walking by on the sidewalk. Tom Murphy, thank you. And all of them said no such thing happened, including people like the Leslie Plumley, who's David and Leslie Plumley were driving by. That's a very respectable middle-class couple who runs the Plumley Chocolates and Flowers down on Cathcart and I guess it's Cedar Street. So it's, you know, and it was really, what happened there was a complete disgrace. The police department made their decision almost within an hour or two after the shooting. The district attorney ratified it within 12 hours. And the Citizens Police Review Board, even though it had to tweak the story somewhat, because every non-police related witness had a different story than those of Officers Carey and his companion, Officer Over, and the Catalyst bouncer who initiated the whole situation, a man named Ben Newman, who was in the back of their squad car. They're the only three who supported their story that Dine was, you know, holding a weapon and pointing it. And even their reports were full of contradictions. But it was never investigated. And as far as I know, I know of no discipline that Officer Connor Carey or Officer Over ever suffered. Any comments, James?
No, I agree. It's been a complete whitewash of the whole incident. I mean, that absolutely, even if you just take the barest minimum of minimums, there were wrongs done. Period. Why has somebody never stood up and said, you know, what are we going to do about this?
Actually, a number of people did try. They went down to the Citizens Police Review Board in mass and spoke at the mic, and of course they were denied a public hearing. They were denied an independent investigation. They were denied an early investigation, and This is under the leadership of Bill Christie, sort of an amiable, ineffectual dentist in town. He's a nice enough guy, but just, you know, didn't have the guts to fight the police department or to stand up to it. I mean, even people like Scott Kennedy, who was then in the city council, who actually made his mark by crippling the police department at birth, I mean, not the police department, crippling the Citizens Police Review Board that would supposedly overview the police department. Even Kennedy suggested an independent investigation would be okay with the council, but the board couldn't get it together to do that with, of course, Lisa Rose, and that's still on the board, still Catherine Byers' appointee on the board, still an influential voice on the board now, although Arnie Leff seems to have been now taken her ideological position, and he's now the new guy on the board. They never would ask for that, and they still haven't asked for that. And the independent investigation we have now, supposedly going around the May 22nd events, where a person wasn't killed, and actually a firearm wasn't even discharged, but a man was threatened with pepper spray by his account. Steve Argue received pepper spray down his mouth by Officer Lefebvre. By his account, a serious matter, because more than 30 people have died in California following pepper spray use. So it's not any joking matter. But even this investigation has now been closed down, declared classified at birth. I mean,
investigation.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, let's put it this way. A woman named Diana Christensen is indeed, she's looking over the police reports. She isn't even interviewing police officers because the Police Officers Association has objected to subject officers being interviewed by her, and the City Council and the Police Review Board don't have the, you know, the ovaries, the balls, the cojones to get it together and say, we're going to do this anyway, and if you want to, you know, embarrass yourself, oh, police department, by avoiding, you know, a real serious investigation of this, then so be it. The public will see what's going on, and we'll have to go through a legal process to get you to act in a fashion that allows for a fair investigation. But they're not doing that. Instead, they want to just sort of calm it all down. You know, we'll let it all go through this time, and maybe next time we'll have changed the rules around so things will be better. That's the Byers approach. And Byers is, of course, the shadow mayor, even though Keith Sugar is the mayor of Santa Cruz. The actual mayor, the woman who has the swing vote, is Byers. She is the one who supposedly was making all the fine stands with Celia Scott last year and the year before around crucial issues, but for some reason she's forgotten her heritage and is now kind of seemingly, she's dragged the whole discussion far to the right. Looks like I got an incoming note here about that death on High Street. It was reported as an overdose, and the victim is a young person, and hopefully we'll have more information on that. Actually, I had an interesting conversation with a woman named Jennifer at the Christmas Day Veterans Hall meal. That Jennifer's partner, Anthony Rouse, died of an overdose, a month or two ago of heroin. And she was very concerned that one of the reasons that people are suffering these overdoses, and I hear it was October 17th,
yeah.
Interesting day, earthquake day. The reason they're suffering this is because police are apparently insisting on warrant checking and arresting and filing charges against people who are looking for medical help under these circumstances. This is at least the claim of people who have been, you know, intimate with or close partners with heroin users, and it's just the wrong way to go. I mean, heroin addiction is an illness. Heroin addiction is aggravated by the huge black market that comes through the drug prohibition war, which actually, unfortunately, benefits the police department, although in a sense it doesn't really benefit them because it produces all kinds of artificial crime and violence and motivations for theft and killings and bad dope. I mean, you name it. The whole thing has been gone through before in the 1920s, of course, with the alcohol prohibition, and, you know, you thought the nation would have learned, but instead you get these idiots, you know, touting their DARE programs and everything else.
A lot of money in fighting drugs.
But anyway, heroin, if you're taking a heroin overdose, there should be, and this is what Jennifer asked me to plead before the Homeless Issues Task Force, that the Homeless Issues Task Force recommend to the police and to the City Council and push for a statement by the police department that it would not attempt to enforce criminal statutes against heroin users in the case of emergency 911 calls in heroin overdoses. Otherwise, it would deter such calls and would be life-threatening to people who are suffering from that. Any comments, James?
Absolutely. I think that a 911 call for help, not necessarily the help of a police officer, but the help of a fireman or the help of a medic, any type of medical personnel, should not require a police presence. Or in the sense of saying that the police presence as in a criminal presence. Okay? He's not there for a criminal reason. They're there for a medical emergency. Heroin overdose is a medical emergency. Why does this officer need to do a warrant check? Okay? Let's take the instance of the little old lady in her house, falls, breaks her hip, 911 is called. Does that police officer run a wanton warrant on that woman? Heck no. I mean, are you crazy? Come on. Why? Then because it's a heroin overdose. Well, because heroin are known to have these other type problems. But this is a medical emergency, and this is causing other people not to place the call, okay? Which causes death, okay? And is that a cool thing? No, it's not. That's an outrageous thing. It's outrageous that our police department would so unduly enforce laws, I mean, to pressure these people, to make people who are with people that are dying scared to call for help.
I think really it's of a piece with the failure of the police to effectively deal with hate crimes against homeless people. We saw this a couple months ago when Carl, I believe his name was Carl.
Yeah, Carl.
You actually brought this man to my attention, James. You know, you.
Yeah, and I we saw interviewed, him immediately after it happened.
We interviewed him. He had been apparently beaten up by youths up at the Mission Street 7-Eleven, attempted to file a complaint with the police. He was somewhat intoxicated himself, and the police refused to take a complaint from him, even though he was bloody and beaten, and instead took him to jail, dumped him in a tank, wouldn't take him to the hospital, and admittedly got some treatment from the nurse. And then he was released into the pouring rain at 1:30 in the morning. I mean, this is I haven't documented this case by tracking down all the details, but I suspect that the man's account was true. Have you heard anything more about this case?
Not anything recently, other than as far as he knows, there's nothing coming of it. I've spoke with Carl, and they haven't contacted him in any way. But of course, you know, they didn't take a police report. So, sure, yeah, the next day, Ken Cole calls them, and they come down to the Homeless Resource Center and do the big-a-baloo, you know, oh, we're taking your report now. But, you know, I mean, honestly, this is, almost 24 hours later. They're taking the report then. What are they going to find? What are they going to do? Not a thing.
Homeless people are not treated like human beings is what it boils down to. They're not treated like human beings, and they're denied the right to sleep at night. They're denied the right to use public spaces. Tomorrow night at first night, you'll see homeless people being treated like less than human as they are sort of hustled away to make room for those with money and more fashionable clothing. And we're talking about people who've lived in this community, some of them for decades, some of them who were born here. It's disgraceful. And it is a human rights violation of the most intimate and severe sort. It's where you have the authorities attacking their own. It's sort of like what Germany did to the Jews. It's sort of like what the United States did to African Americans, is doing to Latin Americans, did to its Native Americans. It's something, and perhaps we can learn from what happened to those oppressed groups. It can only be responded to with resistance. You cannot use nice talk and liberal ideas and rational explanations to try to urge people to restore human rights. I've seen over the last decade, no matter how nicely you explain that a person has to be able to sleep at night to be able to function during the day, you still get Catherine Byers, our former mayor, and still the swing vote on the city council, saying she will never vote for a change in the sleeping ban that allows the homeless to sleep in areas somewhere in the city. It's what she told Tom Nadelsky of the Homeless Issues Task Force, what she told David Silva. According to their accounts, I haven't talked to her directly. I believe those men. And if Catherine Byers, if you happen to be listening, and I'm not quoting you properly, or if your appointee, Sherry Connable, who I now understand has resigned from the Homeless Issues Task Force, is listening in, you want to, you know, give us the update on how Catherine Byers actually thinks, and we're misquoting her, please do. But the fact is, politicians who make political capital out of dehumanizing homeless people and denying them rights as human beings do not deserve to be in those offices. And that goes for the whole bunch of them, ranging from Keith Sugar to Christopher Crone to Catherine Byers. No matter how many small efforts they may make, And they don't make many, I'll tell you. Cronin Sugar made essentially two public efforts before when they were batted down by buyers, and since then they haven't made any efforts at all. And I think that's disgraceful, and I think the community needs, if it's to retain its own conscience, to let them know that's not tolerated in Santa Cruz. And if you feel that, as I feel, that the Homeless Issues Task Force's most recent emergency resolution, which was suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances until there are safety zones set up for homeless people so people aren't going to get beaten to death or beaten into insensibility or hurt or suffer $54 tickets or health risks or have to go into hiding and suffer fear. There should be safe sleeping zones set up, and until that time, you cannot arrest people for sleeping, even if you don't like the idea of those sort of people sleeping in the bushes somewhere. If 500 to 1,500 homeless people are out there because the profiteering has blown the roof off the housing market, then what's needed is to acknowledge the situation and to allow people their basic human rights to shelter themselves during that period of time, until such time as the council gets off its collective asses and does something real on this issue. I encourage you to give a call to 420-5020. That's the city council number tonight and their 24-hour number. Leave a message for Sugar. Leave a message for buyers and say, you had best act on this issue because we put you in office to restore human rights to Santa Cruz, not to maintain taking them away, not to do what the politicians for the last two decades have done, which is respect the rights of the rich and to take away the rights of the poor. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. I should give you a musical break here, but I won't. Instead, you're going to get to hear a little bit of a ticket that I witnessed back in, well, it was December 14th, right after the city council passed a $500,000 appropriation, a huge appropriation for a homeless kitchen. But they couldn't seem to find a dime for increased homeless shelter. It's a very expensive kitchen, and we may hear some of that discussion later. I'm not sure, probably not, because we are going to turn to Dolphin Lee soon, the attempt to evict all the Hispanic folks in the beach flats that's coming down the pike. After I walked out of city council, I walked over to the bench where Robert Steffen, the homeless man with the umbrella, was sitting on Pacific Avenue, the guy they tried to drive away, but won his court fight. And can't deny a person the right to sit on a public bench if he's not hurting anyone. That was good news, although the judge apparently did deny it for about 6 weeks, or maybe a little less, but long period of time, at least a month. This incident happened.
This is the Christmas season. We have Christmas lights on each of these barren little trees up and down the avenue that have, of course, replaced the beautiful foliage and shrubbery that used to be up and down the street. Do you see a spirit of Christmas on the streets?
In some respects, yes, and in some individuals, yes. In some, in others, no. It varies individual to individual.
You're going back to court on December 27th when the issue of whether you can return to the bunch in front of bench in front of Bunny's Shoes, a real tongue twister, is going to be allowed. Boy, I see a ticket being written across the street here. I'm going to pause briefly and check it out. I'll be right back.
For jaywalking. Right across here.
And coming to them to tell them that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I get a ticket right here.
What's your date of birth, sir?
For jaywalking.
Mm-hmm.
Right here. And I already spent 5 days in jail. And I received this, another ticket, and I'm on SSI for depression and for schizophrenia, and I received this. I had to pay more money to them tonight on the date of December 14th from these officers who are just doing their job, but they're not doing it right because there's tons of people in the flats area. They're selling drugs and numerous chemicals, mind-altering drugs, and they're doing it right there, even in the very hotel room that I stay at.
Sonny, what's your date of birth?
My date of birth is 7/23/75. How much is a ticket? And they can't even tell me how much the ticket is when
probably,
they're writing it for
probably $162.
$162.
A
That's a guess.
That's not what I'm quoting.
That's the bail.
Sir, I can't afford this.
Sir,
why? Why are you giving me a ticket? I can't afford this. I'm on SSI. I'm a poor person.
Two officers ticketing homeless people for jaywalking on Pacific Avenue, folks. Police officers ticketing homeless people for jaywalking on Pacific Avenue. Your taxpayer dollars at work, folks. Two police officers ticketing homeless individuals for jaywalking right across here on Pacific Avenue.
Will be used in the court law. How does that go?
Officer Gallegos. And badge 171 are in fact engaging in abusive behavior here. And it's about, 5:55. You missed that jaywalker. Better get him.
Anything you say will be
So it appears that the officers are selectively targeting a particular group of people that they were watching from across the street. Police officers ticketing homeless-looking people for jaywalking, folks.
Jaywalking on accident.
Have you ever heard of a ticket for jaywalking across Pacific Avenue? Watch these two police officers here. They're giving them out to homeless people. Keeping. Tickets for jaywalking on Pacific Avenue, folks. These two police officers ticketing homeless people for jaywalking. Your taxpayer dollars at work, walking across Pacific Avenue. That's correct. The Christmas spirit at work, thanks to the Santa Cruz Police Department. Tickets for jaywalking across Pacific Avenue. And that was a ticket that was given on December 14th by two officers to an individual whose name I later wrote down. It doesn't appear immediately on the tape. And it's interesting to play that, not just because it, of course, graphically illustrates. You can't see the incident, of course. It's audio tape. But if you want to believe us, unless you think we're fabricating the whole thing, this is the kind of thing that you're going to see happening at First Night tomorrow night. And it's interesting, I think, to consider doing what you hear me doing on the tape, which is raising your voice and not addressing yourself to the police officers, but addressing yourself to the crowd to let people know what's going on with the police and to kind of interpret for the community what's happening. Because the police, you know, commands a lot of fear in this community, in some respect in some quarters and some contempt in others, but a lot of fear. And people don't like, they're almost afraid to stop and watch. But if you make it a kind of a theatrical spectacle, and you point out what's going on, be accurate as you can in raising your voice and talking about it, I think it does, creates a situation where the police start getting deterred. They get embarrassed. They start wondering what they're doing. They start wondering who's got a video camera. They start wondering who's watching. Is the news media nearby? And it has all these positive consequences. If they're engaging in real apprehension of real criminals, of course, then they have nothing to worry about. You know, they're engaging in behavior that, when you look it over more closely, it's perfectly justifiable. I'm not suggesting you engage in running in and taking away prisoners. I'm not suggesting you start throwing tomatoes at the police. I'm suggesting rather that you let the public realize they have the right to watch these incidents, that it's in fact good public policy for them to do that, and it's also a way of defending the rights of weaker people, people who are less wealthy, when the police move in. And the police, of course, adopt a variety of guises when this happens. We saw, if you were listening to my last show in Berkeley, I took some tapes when I was up there a week ago, and the police saw me coming over with their tape recorder, and they immediately started saying things about, "Can we help you with shelter, sir?" to the people they were talking to. And what's amusing, of course, was when I talked to the people afterwards, that they were not interested in giving us shelter. They wanted us to move off Telegraph Avenue into the shadows with our shopping carts.
because they didn't want us to be seen up here in this area. And they altered their story when it became clear that their behavior was public. It's a kind of a, you know, it's an amusing form of hypocrisy, although it's also rather disgusting when you consider that these are guys with badges and guns who are entrusted with your safety and have the power to just snuff out your life at the snap of the fingers. It's really the truth, and it's really something that might sober you even as you begin your first night festivities. Lots of tapes here, so let me see if I can do some quick playing here. We've done the jaywalking ticket. Let's turn to... I wish I could find that orange peel ticket. I'm going to go back to a city council meeting where the issue was the... I mentioned before, right before this jaywalking ticket happened... I think I have the right tape here. Take another look at it. Right before this jaywalking ticket happened, there had been an afternoon session of the last city council meeting of the year, the same city council meeting where the $10,000 homeless issues task force begged and urged and pleaded and said, we've done all this work for the last 4 months, put on the agenda this one item about the homeless, about people who are sleeping outside. Don't let them get arrested for sleeping until they're safe sleeping zones. And if you can't do it successfully, if you lose the vote, we don't care, but raise the issue to the public. You have to get this issue out to the community because it is such a clear violation of basic human rights and affects so many people. And Sugar, of course, refused to do anything of the kind. He even refused to keep his own commitment to respond to the issue at oral communications, the public comment period where he couldn't actually put it on the agenda, or actually he could try to put it on as an emergency item. He refused to do that, but he could comment on it even if he couldn't put it on the agenda. He could kind of lead the public, talk about it in some way, but he wouldn't do that either. So what happened instead was there were two items on the agenda that affected homeless people at the last council meeting. One was the homeless kitchen, which was this huge $500,000 kitchen, which, you know, I mean, I think it's very nice that you give a kitchen to the homeless services center. But, you know, again, it's like certain preferred and pampered projects get all this attention, and then we're all supposed to lie down and ignore shelter needs, ignore the needs of people for things like a bridge over Highway 1 so people can walk between the Homeless Services Center and Ocean Avenue without getting ticketed by Officer Perry, also known as RoboCop, as they try to use the very narrow and dangerous lip of the freeway, or open up a bay for shelter in the Homeless Services Center because there is no other shelter to be had without getting arrested, as Robert Steffen was 3 times in a row, and serve 90 days in jail for sleeping because there are no places for homeless people to sleep outside. Thanks to Catherine Byers, who's not only former mayor and swing vote on the city council, but also key member of the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors. You know, it's interesting how all these things link together. So here was this issue of the homeless kitchen, and here's what I and Scott Graham had to say about it.
No other questions. Is there anybody? I don't have any cards. Anyone wants to speak on this?
Yeah, actually, I did. I did pass on a card, and I didn't reach it. Yeah, thank you.
Also want to point out that, again, as I mentioned before, Keith Sugar, the mayor, went wild in denying public process at this last meeting. You don't hear it very clearly, but this is the third item on which he essentially was not allowing public comment, or was moving forward without public comment. It wasn't that he wasn't allowing it, but he wasn't acknowledging that the people had a right to speak. I had to literally stand up, kind of, you know, elbow my way to the mic and say, excuse me, you know, there's public comment on this item. And, of course, on several of the other items, he cut me off and essentially under unspoken threat, shut up or, you know, face some kind of consequences in terms of being barred from the room or whatever, sit down. A whole series of these incidents in this one council session persuaded me that Sugar was not only acting badly on the Homeless Issues Task Force resolution and he was making a bad judgment call, he was betraying his commitments, he was being cowardly on this issue, but also that he had decided that the public be damned in this situation, particularly if the public included critics like myself that he didn't want to hear. Oral communications was extended twice in the evening session to allow for business speakers like Peter Eberle, but when it came to Dan Hopkins and myself, they cut off oral communications so that the last two speakers, myself and Hopkins, could not speak. And there was several other incidents too. I do not have the list before me, but those are the ones that come to mind. Let's hear more about the homeless kitchen issue.
You know, I certainly support feeding programs for the homeless. Indeed, we were arrested, many of us, back in 1989 by police direct from the mayor of the city council at that time when we fed people the town clock for 6 months, and again the next year when we set up the precursor to this kitchen and the free meal program. And so it's certainly always good to see money being spent for food for homeless people. The two questions that come to my mind are, one, why is it so expensive? There's a huge amount of money for a kitchen and a roof repair, and I mean, there may be a fine reason for that, but it does seem very expensive. And the second thing is, you know, we had a lot of attention being given to, indeed, an important issue, indeed, to the extent of suggesting an emergency, declaring an emergency. But contrast this with $500,000 for, so let's say, shelter, which is, I think, even more pressing at this time than a new kitchen. And there's utter silence on the city council. That's what we've seen throughout the year. Not a word about this. So I think it's important to see the disparity here and to ask the question, why? Why this kind of specific delegation of resources? So I would support funding for a kitchen. I'm just wondering, where is the funding for that's going to stop people from dying this winter? Thanks.
Good afternoon, I'm Scott Graham, and my concern here too is that in the staff report it doesn't really say how much the kitchen's costing. You know, there's three different things happening here. We're having a kitchen built, we're having a roof repaired, and office space created. And it's not really broken down as to how much that, you know, these various components are. And if you were to say that maybe the kitchen was a third of that cost, or maybe half the cost, it seems an awful, awful high price for a kitchen. I don't think any restaurant in town has ever spent anywhere close to $500,000 installing a kitchen in a restaurant. And so I'd like to see these numbers broken down into some way where we could tell how much we're spending on what. Thanks.
Excuse me, would you like to delay it for a moment?
No, I don't want to delay it. I mean, I think they could give you those numbers.
You know, I think you're perfectly right that we need to make sure that that was done correctly, and I will ask in order that question.
I'm not sending any message to delay this. I think, you know, we do need to have better facilities for the homeless people. I mean, right now we're eating out of a roach coach that's just about ready to fall apart, so. I think, you know, having a real kitchen is a good thing. I just like to see the numbers, kind of, how what's for what.
Thanks, Scott. Mike, a couple points. I'm not going to make a motion because I'm stupid here, but I can respect that.
This is Councilmember Rock.
The reason it's going to cost so much is because we're not putting a kitchen into a restaurant. We're building a restaurant. I mean, we've got a shell of a building here that needs major work. The roof leaks, there's no plumbing adequate for a restaurant, either the water door or the sewage out, and there's a whole range of things that need to be done to build a building. And it's not all supplies, it's the building cost by $500,000. You see that all the time. A private home cost, stuff in that range these days. And this needs to rise to the level of public standards. It's not something that somebody sort of re-makeshift. It needs to last for a long time, unfortunately. And homelessness is not going to probably go away. So I don't see any problem with proceeding with it. We put that to bid a number of times, and the bid's another way of telling whether you're paying too much. I mean, somebody thinks this can be that cheaper, let them bid on the job. So we want to have them come in a cheaper rental. I hope in 10 days his motion will include two things. One, findings here about the state of this emergency that we're in. In fact, there are a large number of homeless people in the community. It is important that we make the findings that public safety and that health are promoted by making this decision the way that we're doing it. And I think there's no question about that.
So again, we hear Rodkin talking about the importance of a state of emergency so that a kitchen can be facilitated, though there have been no indication that homeless people who are using the old kitchen are suffering any health consequences. But the real state of emergency, because of violence and because of lack of shelter, is being completely ignored by the same council member Rodkin, who, were he to take a position on this, could have a very significant impact. He would form a potential majority with Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar. Any comments on this, James?
Well, yeah.
to sit there and listen to him give his political double talk as usual. I mean, to say that, you know, all these factors come into well, let's just pick the one thing where he says, do you want, you mean we should stop this or hold it up? I mean, because the gentleman asked for an accurate accounting of dollars spent.
That actually was Keith Sugar.
I know, that's what I'm talking about. Keith Sugar said this.
Most of the stuff that's coming about is from Rodkin. Yeah.
But I mean, they're both, it's the same thing. It's a lot of double talk because it takes 5 minutes to write up a set of plans and show you dollar. Okay? Well, maybe not five. Okay, I'm being a little farcical there. But we all understand that it's a very simple thing to actually put down X number of dollars for X number of items. Exactly. Okay? It will not slow things down. It will not hold up construction. It will not hold up reconstruction, whatever they want to call it. It doesn't. For this job to be done, these figures already are there somewhere. Whoever the contractor or bidder is taking the job has written these figures already. They're out there. Okay? All it is getting a copy of it. What is going to hold things? So it's just a way of saying, no, we're not going to give you these figures because we don't want you to know that we're spending X number of dollars on office space or on this or that, wheedling the money away, pissing it off, okay? When we have an emergency out there, people are dying, people can't sleep, people can't work, they make a choice. The choice is work or sleep, okay? Because you go to the shelter and they say, you got to be here at 3:30. You can't leave, okay? If you get off work at 5 o'clock, you're shit out of luck. Quote, Miguel, you're shit out of luck. That's just too fucking bad. This is their employees. And yet, a kitchen is so damn important. $500,000, and yet we can't sleep. People every night that want to work and raise themselves up and become people again, become members of society again. But they're not people because they're not drug addicts or they're not alcoholics that are getting SSI checks, $700, $800, $900 a month, and then they go up their armory and they die in their damn armory anyway. Will died up there. So he gets $765 a month.
Will is the man who I guess he most recently died, what, a few days ago?
Yeah, at the armory, heart attack, okay? But it's conditions, okay? It's a man who's been abused by society, abused by our government, a war hero, although nobody bothers to say that. Down there, he's just that dirty alcoholic, that crazy man. When I worked there, I used to take him because he'd have to sleep next because they wouldn't let him go to the armories because he talks to things that aren't there. Okay, so he's too much of a crazy. He makes the other people uncomfortable. They wouldn't let him go, so I worked there. I'd take him with me. Okay, I know Will really well. This man has 2 Bronze Stars, 60 combat missions for our country, and he was a piece of shit to the shelter people. And that's exactly wingnut, garbage, alcoholic, bum. These are the terms used by employees of that place. Okay, and yet they need a big fancy kitchen. They can't manage to find space for a war hero. Okay, and then when they do, he's sleeping on a floor, and he dies of a heart attack, and nobody even notices that this man is ill or injured in any way. Problem is hanging out at that shelter space is such a damn drug place that they hooked Will on heroin. Will died of heroin, okay, point blank, because of the fact that he couldn't find anywhere to live. He started hanging there. He started hanging with the wrong people there who are considered good people because they're drug addicts. And now Will's dead.
You're again maligning the staff of the Homeless Services Center.
I'm sorry. I'm sick of it. Okay? And not all the staff. Okay? Because we've got a few staff there that bust their balls for what they can do. I'm talking about staff in position of power. Okay? I'm talking Ken Cole. I mean, this crap. I'm sorry, Ken, but it's crap. You come out there when they do the little media thing about all the deaths. Oh, we're so sorry these people died, and it's so terrible the homeless are dying. Where the hell were you when Ray Stitt's memorial was done? What did the shelter do for Ray Stitt? You said you were so upset about his death, but we had a memorial? Where were you? Where were any of your staff except Mike Bustos, who wrote a real nice thing about it because he wanted to be there, but he had to be in Arizona for a family thing, so he couldn't make it. But you know, there wasn't not one employee of the Homeless Community Center or ISSB that came to that except for George. George came, he came very smoke, but he really doesn't have, he's just a lower employee like Frankie is or Sonny is. All these guys are busting their balls, but they're lowly employees, okay, and they care about the people. And I didn't see nobody from the office. And I'm talking Ken Cole, Jeremy Jitka, you know, where were these people? This is their program. This is when the media came.
They sure were out there talking to them media. They love getting their picture in the paper, you know. But where are they when it really counts? They don't care about the homeless. They care about their money.
Obviously, the man is mentally ill and should be taken out of the studio, but I'm going to allow him to continue to talk because, hey, it makes good radio. You, too, can make good radio. Call in to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 427-3772. We have another 45 minutes of Bathrobe Spears broadsides to go, and we're going to be turning soon to Dolphin Lee. But before we do, let's hear a few more angry voices because anger is healthy in this situation.
And where were you? Were you?
I am mostly up by National Bridges.
And how did they give you tickets or just harass you?
No, just harass pretty much. I mean, I'm afraid of a ticket, of course. But, yeah.
Well, they'd rather have sleep-deprived lunatics roaming the streets than...
Exactly.
We came here for a show. People. We just came to see a show and we stayed the night before and we don't have a hotel.
You're looking for a place to sleep.
Well, yeah. Which we're just going to like park the car and chase us around. Different spots.
I go to sleep for a little while.
You may be fine, yeah, but it's there is this law that we're trying to get rid of.
You guys will be fine because you're tourists. You don't live here, right? You'll be fine. They won't ticket tourists. They won't.
Mike Hoyt would be feeling about this.
Well, no, because they know us, and us as homeless people in this town, they know us, so we are bad news.
We're gonna create an oppressive society
where people will just not be able to have a home, but then we're going to not let them sleep anywhere or have a place to live. So we basically want you to just kind of disappear. That just doesn't really happen, I'm afraid.
It's illegal to sleep during the day, right?
If you don't lie down downtown, yes. It's illegal to lie down here at any time.
So they want us to sleep all day and then be up all night. So what are we going to do in the middle of the night? Rob?